Welcome to today's episode of CLCI Live, brought to you by the award-winning and ICF-accredited school, Certified Life Coach Institute. Sit back, relax, and enjoy today's episode.
Welcome to CLCI Live.
Hi, everybody. We are today, I like the title, it says Anti-Fragility, Why Coaches Should Embrace Chaos and Disorder. That's pretty exciting. Before we get into the chaos and the disorder, the absolute insanity, I just want to remind everybody to please comment, join in the conversation. We want to hear from you as we do this live. That's why we do it, so that we can hear from you. So please join in the chat and give us your input, feedback, thoughts, questions, whatever you may have. I think that's all for now in that space. Who wants to start this, get the show going, huh?
So we are talking about the concept of anti-fragility.
I like how scary, are you trying to sound manly or scary?
Manly and scary.
Both.
Yeah, being manly means being scary. I've seen this when I first came across this, like it was like in like men's blogs type of things where, and I put the link to one of them and it's like, don't be a sissy and resilient, be anti-fragile.
Which is kind of not what, I mean, ultimately that's a...
Yeah, ultimately not, but... It comes from, this is like a newer term, I'm pretty sure it's newer. It comes from a guy named Nassim Nicholas Taleb, a very smart writer, who wrote the book on this, where this
literally
comes from. But it's distinguishing what fragility is, what resilience is, and then finally what anti-fragility is, which... ultimately, we should all be aiming for is being anti-fragile.
Because it's even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
more awesome.
Better than resilience. That's for sissies. You want to be anti-fragile.
You want to be anti-fragile. In a nutshell, mm-hmm. What is anti-fragility? Can we say, is there a way to...
Do you want to start with what is being fragile?
Okay, let's start with that. Let's start with what fragility is. Let's talk about fragility. What is fragility?
You.
Me?
And you.
Jerome, what is fragility?
I think fragility, at least in the context that we're speaking in, that means that you don't have the ability to be flexible. You don't have a whole lot of means when it comes to, when it comes to the basics that you need to live and to thrive. I don't know that, again, in this context, speaking in this realm, I don't know that speaking about being fragile, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being fragile, I don't know that you have a lot of options when it comes to, again, achieving those basic needs that you need. To me, kind of when I was doing my research, that's what I culminated. That's what I kind of got out of it. You don't have a whole lot of options when it comes to achieving and attaining what you need to live and thrive as a person.
Hello, Jen. Jen's fragile. She got sick and couldn't join us for a while.
Her voice is anyway. She says the rest of her strong right now.
I think a good example that was given in this space, there's a couple, is like if we just take like what do we know of really come what when we write on package fragile. Right?
Breakable. Mm-hmm.
Breakable, right? Handle with care. Like it's deliberately got to be, you can't be rough with it. It's going to easily crumble or break. It's, very easily breakable. But some other real life, like human examples of this is like, if you are a large corporation that's built on one thing, like you got one thing and one thing only, you're actually fragile, because if that thing is disrupted in some way or loses its ability to exist or thrive, your whole company's gone. Blockbuster. There's an example right there. A fragile company ultimately, because it had an entire business structure based on these in-person tangible sales. Streaming came along and boom, gone. Whereas like an anti-fragile example, obviously, would be something like Netflix, Hulu, things that are easily adaptable, that are also spread out, like a lot of space because there's a lot of places.
You're getting a little quiet.
Yeah. I was thinking, being able to break up what you do and sort of compartmentalize it so that if one piece, you lose one piece, you still got 15 others that are doing a good job. And so I think that that, to me, I guess, the fragility there is the more you have to lose, the more fragile you are, kind of, in many ways. So
I'm reminded of something from a really long time ago, some study I had, and so I'm grasping at straws here. On what I was researching it about. I mean, I was probably in my 20s. Nevertheless, what I remember is the comparison between female and men in the sense of starvation of all things. And women would become more fragile once recovery happened. They would still have a longer period of being fragile, where they were discussing the men's growth in their bone structure and different parts of how their physique adapted and then even grew, had the ability to get stronger through that process. I always thought that was fascinating. I don't know if that's still true. I mean, we're probably talking in the 80s when I researched it. And so it was probably a 60s-70s kind of study, but I thought that was interesting and kind of flared in with what we're talking about today.
So we Anthony.
Oh, I wanted to say what Jen posted. Most important question: is it fragile or fragile?
Or fragile?
Actually, it's actually an Italian word, and it's pronounced fragile.
That's what I said. It's fragile.
Fragile, but no one would understand us if we said that. Although I like that. I like the saying it that way better.
A little fragile. Christmas story reference for you.
Yes. now I want a lamp.
To bring it back to coaching, if we're still talking about just what are fragile things, maybe our client isn't fragile. It might be kind of difficult to just classify a person as you're a fragile person, you're a resilient person. I think it's probably more accurate to say a coach is going to encounter fragile goals or fragile
mindsets
or long-term or short-term goals. Mm-hmm. If I had a client whose goal was, I need to make $1 million and I only need to make $1 million by, I don't know, investing in Bitcoin. Let's just say that as a goal. Does that sound like a resilient goal or a very fragile goal?
I think it's a resilient goal. Thank you.
He wasn't asking what you wanted it to be.
Whatever we invested in Bitcoin, we've all yet to see
nothing
come up as an investment. But let's just say the client, that's the only way to do it. That's the only way to make $1 million is to do it in Bitcoin. Any other way is not going to work for them.
It's a fragile goal because it's easily breakable and singular and small-minded, small world-viewed. They took their money and put it into several different places, and they did what we call diversifying. Mm-hmm. You may probably have a much better chance of making that million and not losing that million very quickly. That being said, we still don't know if Bitcoin is a good investment. Let's not go there.
I'm getting doubtful, but luckily I've diversified my investment, so. I'm not only depending on Bitcoin as my $1 million ticket. But if a client, let's make it more general though. If a client has a single-minded goal that is dependent on one key thing that is really kind of out of their control, it's a fragile goal.
Well, I think too, what'll happen is if we're speaking in this space, is your client will get there and they may see only one way to get somewhere. Right. Let's say they go, okay, this is the only way to go, and that fails. Right. And now they're sitting there going, there's no other options. we as a coach are there to challenge that thought process and do so by asking around that there's no other option. Really, there's no other option. There's can you see imagine a world in which there wasn't another option? And that then takes the, I don't think that the goal may be fragile. What I think might be fragile is the process or the expectation of the process. I think one of the good examples given again in this space was if we as people, it's good to have like some variations, some ups and downs, some good and bad. We learn throughout that. It's not always good to have like the huge different, like that's that singular focus, right? If we need, if the, I guess the good example of this is if we fall 1 foot 10 times, we'll probably survive. But if we fall a one-time 10-foot fall, we'll probably break ourselves a lot worse. So it's best to sort of break up that chaos, that goal, those things can go wrong. And then that's that micro. Those are that micro goal setting within your major goal or your macro.
Well, that's not even what fragile is. That's more like maybe talking about maybe things that are more resilient. A fragile thing wouldn't even survive a 1 foot fall. Your entire goal is dependent on things staying the same, no things ever going wrong. And if that is what you're depending your goals on, is that nothing goes wrong, then you're going to be in for a very bad time because things go wrong all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So part of our job as a coach are putting in those disruptors, and there are some people will argue only think positively, but part of the strategy of doing life is we have to prepare, and preparing means we have to think about things that will cause chaos and disrupt what our intentions are so that we can better prepare for the next step that we, so this is where resilience can come in, the experiment of what those next steps can be and where anti-fragility or fragile, did I say anti-fragile? can really allow that growth mindset to really set in and really make us stronger as a human. And when you find that you're around stronger type humans with that mindset of growth, people are attracted to that. They love to go around that mindset where they are not just adapting, but growing and thriving through the process.
So when it comes to someone that is fragile,
that was a thunder.
So when it comes to someone who's fragile, what we're saying, you should start going looking for trouble. You're safe in the earth.
But it's almost like that. So one of the concepts in this is that if you're like, you know, if you're doing the same thing day in and day out, you know, and you're not experiencing any kind of variation, any kind of disorder, any kind of change, and it's just the same, it becomes monotonous, it becomes the grind, it becomes this draining rut thing. So we as people, because we are organic things, we crave some versatility, some for to switch things up, to change things a bit. And anybody who probably doesn't crave that is I mean, I'd be shocked. I know that they exist. I know those people exist, but truthfully, it's kind of like an anti natural thing. We as people crave disorder, and sometimes so much as to put it into our lives deliberately. People create chaos in their lives all the time, and that's probably because we crave it in many ways.
I think it might be a bit of a generalization, though, because I've met people who've had chaotic lives who are trying to get to some sort of norm where things aren't so chaotic. It might be people who've led normal lives want a little bit of chaos to brighten it up. But this leads into resiliency, where that's the trap of being a resilient person rather than a fragile person. Resilient people, you know, a lot of stressors can happen, But they'll always return back to the norm.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. They're pretty flexible, but it doesn't lead to for room for growth, even though you're avoiding the bad stuff in life.
Well, I think that, so with it, I mean, the embracing chaos concept, like, I think that where you're kind of missing the mark there when you say that there are people who have a lot of chaos in their lives and they're trying to get a lot of norm. I think that there is a difference between healthy chaos and like unhealthy chaos, right? There are those of us who are put a lot of things on our plate. So our lives feel chaotic in that moment, but there's tremendous benefit. Typically you get through that chaotic time and you do it and you deliberately put yourself into that situation because you know that the outcomes are going to be beneficial. You know that you're going to go through some stressors, you're going to go through a little chaos, but at the end of it, the results are going to be worthwhile, and you build it in that you get that downtime, that quality, you know, sort of celebration time, that breather moment, that reset, so that then you can sort of create the chaos again, right? Like but that chaos is what gives us growth. That disorder is what gives us growth, and our ability to get through it, to create it and thrive and through that process is that concept of anti-fragility, right? Mm-hmm. Is what at least my take is on it.
So do we have any real life examples of anti-fragile systems or things on hand that would be helpful for like the viewer to like be able to visualize?
I pulled up an example because I liked this example from one of the articles that I read, and it's from Obi-Wan. So some of you will relate to who that is. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. The other one is the Hydra, the mythical Hydra that grows two new heads every time you cut off one.
And for those of you who didn't watch Star Wars, that's what happened to Obi-Wan.
What's interesting about the Hydra, though, to take it to like an interesting level, is in order for it to grow two heads, though, you have to cut off a head, mm-hmm. right? So you have to murder
go through the
you have to kill something, right? Suffer the loss of it to grow the two heads, which is in a way we go, okay, you have to embrace that you're going to have to suffer through that loss, through that chaos, through that mm-hmm. disorder, so that you can be stronger as a result. Mm-hmm. I think that in real life application in many ways is this is what clients are coming to coaches for. Clients are coming to coaches because they typically want to get to a point and they're ready for some change. And so they come to coaches to sort of sort through, okay, I'm going to create this disorder in my life. I'm ready to accomplish this. I know that I'm going to have to do all these steps and change is going to have to happen. I'm going to have to take risk, but I'm here with a coach so that I can sort of workshop that process and not just dive into the chaos of the disorder without some kind of plan.
How many clients do you think go in to like, if a client has never done coaching before, how many clients do you think go into a coaching relationship with that awareness rather than it'll be an easy process where they just kind of get what they want without the stressors and the chaos being involved?
I think that the client may have already experienced the stressors and they're feeling like they need a help to get, like they can't do it on their own essentially when they're coming in.
Yeah, they don't want to go the route that they had gone usually, and obviously I'm in couples, but I think it goes anywhere. So the couple would come in, they don't want to repeat mm-hmm. what they just experienced, and so they want to learn how to this is ultimately what we're doing, is they're learning how to find that anti-fragility concept through resilience, through the interaction of what they've already learned, and find the growth in that relationship. What they usually come in doing is pointing fingers and blaming the other person and how they're the one that needs to change, and find the growth in that experience. So, yeah. Yeah, they definitely come in, usually impacted in some fashion.
It's funny to think. I don't even know if a couple could be described as fragile. I don't even know if they'd make it to the coaching or counseling stage to begin with.
Yeah. Really. You know,
I think it would be interesting to, I mean, this is just off the cuff here. I think that many couples go into a thing, you know, there's like, they expect it to be this like really easy singular, we're going to get married and you're building up to this big crescendo. And then, but I think if as a couple, you just sort of embrace that, okay, there's going to be a little bit of chaos, a little bit of disorder. That's why healthy couples argue, right? Yeah. That's why healthy couples, they do. They don't, it's not always puppies and kittens and butterflies. They are, what they do are able to sort of have that friction. They create a little friction between one another, but then they work through it. They become stronger as a result of having gone through it and had those conversations. And then they move on to the next thing. And so that's why that concept of healthy couples do actually argue a bit, and it's built into them creating a stronger relate that. That's how that foundation is built.
It can. If that couple recognizes that this is a growth mentality, not a resentment holding and building.
That's like, it's like fair fighting or healthy fighting. Yeah. It's not, it's that you are coming together with the intention of I guess working with one another and making it to the next step, and not from a place of, okay, I'm right, you're wrong. But that's, you're not thinking as a couple at that point, right?
Well, they do come in many times thinking that their partner is wrong. They're going to go to placate the situation and show that they're putting in effort. That's what many do. But when they recognize their part in it, that's when the work can begin. And that growth mindset that we're talking about, that anti-fragility, that's where a rock solid relationship can withstand, you know, the weathering that relationships go through. I mean, frankly, you know, they do speak about relationships. They, meaning like Gottman, has done research on lots of couples, lots and lots and thousands of couples. And one of the perspectives is the couple that never argues. Okay, so you've got the couple that never argues, but they still have that healthy mindset, that anti-fragility growth mindset behavior, whereas the other one has the resentment, what we call the resentment flu, where all of they hold acts that they feel were done against them in that resentment building. So there's that couple that has the ability to thrive and grow even in a non-disruptive, you know, that argument style. And then you have the medium couples that, you know, periodically will fight. They'll periodically have disruptors in their relationship. And then it's the same thing. Those that work towards anti-fragility, I don't know, whatever the word is, those are going to thrive and grow stronger within the relationship, which is what you were talking about, Brooke. But that doesn't mean that they will come in thinking that way. And one has to be able to have some gumption, I guess. I don't know. To be able to recognize their part in the interaction of it would be the same in business. There's lots of business disruptors. And if you can't allow yourself to grow in that business, it's kind of the same thing that I described with a couple.
I was just going to bring it there. So like I was thinking, okay, so us as a company, right? Or us as any, if you pick like a monopoly, right? If there's a singular company, it has zero competition. It's able to just sort of like do whatever.
Fingers crossed we'll be there.
It's able to do whatever it wants, but it's not forced to grow, right? It's not, doesn't have to adapt. It doesn't have to, it just has to, it can sit there and do, but eventually what will happen is somebody's going to come in with something quicker, better, stronger, faster, and disrupt that company. And they're not capable of adapting, they're going to crumble. But if you take something like that has a lot of competition, right? you're constantly in this space of ensuring that you're going to be growing and staying on top and staying on the pulse and staying on the beat, because you've got to sort of constantly be reinventing yourself, mm-hmm. or rebuilding yourself so that you're capable of floating along, staying on the upper part, yeah. Of what is going on. Healthy competition is called healthy competition for a reason, because it mm-hmm. what does it do is it challenges you, and it assists you in growth.
And that's kind of the thing in anything. If you are uncomfortable being challenged, and I know many people who are uncomfortable being challenged because they haven't learned the ability about what that means. They only see it as a failure to go through that challenge versus finding that growth mm-hmm. experience from it. So it's knock them down, they stay down concept.
If you can't take criticism, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I mean, from the perspective of, if like a writing perspective, Anthony, yeah. if you write a book, or you're going to have several editors go through and sort of pick it apart and give you feedback, give you criticism. What does that do? It makes a better book, right? It makes going through that process absolutely will make a better book. And if you're not capable of going through that process, you're going to suffer greatly, and many would say you probably won't be successful. So you've got to be open to that now what is that? That's chaos, that's disorder, that's making you anti-fragile, because you've gone through that and been willing to and sort of embraced that process. I think that many creative processes have this concept of disorder or critique built into it in order to create a product that is anti-fragile and successful.
So I have a question that I don't know if we have the answer, but I'm going to ask this just because in our readings, in our listening, all this anti-fragile behavior, it said it's 2.0, right? It's the 2.0 of being resilient or robust. Don't we have to be resilient in order to get to anti-fragile?
I think there's a level of resilience that has to happen for you to be anti-fragile. Just, I guess, to put it to help understand that mm-hmm. answer, I don't think that, you know, without resilience, you can't. I just can't imagine a scenario where there's no yeah. resilience taking place yeah. in anti-fragile space.
I have a good example of this. If you take it to a medical space, like if we have a human being that mm-hmm. is severely compromised, like very, very ill, very, 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 very ill, we're going to mm-hmm. take them and put them in a protective space. We're not going to introduce yeah. contaminants. We're going to keep them very safe because we know they are fragile.
Right.
So but if you have a human that is healthy, we're actually going to deliberately, a lot of times it's been proven, it's good for us to be out in an environment other humans.
Oh yeah.
Being amongst contaminants and things, because it makes us stronger to sort of mm-hmm. be in those spaces. And if we don't, we can actually make us weaker. Mm-hmm. So your point is spot on, mm-hmm. because we, in order for us to introduce these disorders, kind of, you wouldn't want to do that to the person that is severely immunocompromised. They're just not in a space they're capable of handling that.
Yeah.
So I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. To some degree, we have to be in a space of capable of doing that. But that sort of brings in this evolutionary concept of, when you sort of take it to the next level of that what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, or that yeah. Hydra, mm-hmm. that Hydra has to first be capable of growing back two heads before you sever its head off. You have that ability. Yeah. You're just killing yeah. it. You're just killing
it. Is it capable? Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that capability mm-hmm. does absolutely play a role in it, I would say.
Essentially, like, if we're talking about just people and humans, resilience is the ability to handle the stress.
Mm-hmm.
Fragility is the ability to grow from the stress. So, for example, if I were to lift weights, you know, I can lift a 5-pound weight all day, maybe not all day, but a 5-pound weight, but my arms can resist the stress of the 5-pound weight. I can lift it up, move it around, yada, yada, yada. but it's not going to make me any stronger. I need to inject more stress in the system where actual muscular breakdown happens. So I need to lift heavy weights until my muscles start to tear, like little tiny micro tears. But that's how muscles are built. They tear very, very small tears, and then they grow and build and more, and you get more strength and more resilience along with that. Being anti-fragile means you also get more resilience on top of that.
There's a critical element, though, in that if we're going to take it to that metaphor, and this is where we build in that when we were talking about people who exist in chaos, but they, just like when you go and you work out, you have to have a rest period. Like, mm-hmm. So you go, you put yourself under stress, but then you have to allow yourself that beat for your body to heal so that then it can become stronger. And so I'm going
through that right now with my poor little leggies.
It's very, very critical to give that rest period. And I think a lot of times what people don't, especially maybe even in the US and things like that, we forget to build in that we become such a work-centric culture, like go, work. The criticalness of having that cool down, give yourself a break, take a vacay, have a few days off, it's okay. You have to build that in, because without it, it's just stress on stress. And it's not that stress is bad, it's that we don't give ourselves the time to recover from it.
The culture of business, though, has been supportive of people not fulfilling their rest periods. You know, when you look at Europe, they are very much great example of working very hard, very diligently, and really encouraging that rest period for their people that work for them. Not only that, when they have a baby, you know, the time off maternity leave, right? We're starting to have a conversation about men having time off to spend with their children when they're just being born. They've been doing it over there for, I don't know how long, longer than I know. And we're just now starting to tip that scale a little bit.
Yeah.
It's space almost... go on, Jerome.
Just before we move on from that space of rest, it's so important. I think also, I don't think we mentioned yet, just it gives you the ability to assess, like when we're talking about with relax, taking a break from the gym, for example, assessing you haven't hurt yourself. You know, if you're doing that stress on stress, and you don't take a break, you may not figure out the fact of the matter that you're hurting yourself. You may be injuring yourself with work. You want to make sure you have some time to assess if you're still, you know, if you're stuck in that process of just the grind, doing it over and over again. If you don't have time to assess and make sure that this is what you want to do, are you really growing or growing the way that you would actually like, you know, yourself to grow in? So just speaking again to how important and critical that rest is.
I was just thinking about this. Also, in this business space, we're talking about anti-fragility. I think that there are a lot of people who view themselves as much more, I guess you could say, what is fragile, but they even position themselves to be the only one who's capable of doing this thing in my business. I'm the only one who can. Like, so what is that doing? That's creating, making you a very fragile environment for you and where you're working. It's actually critical for you, if you want the success of the business or anything, to create, teach people what you do, teach others, so that if you're not present, everything can still go on without you. Mm-hmm. And as we're sharing in this space, I'm thinking, well, the best thing to do is to sort of let go of that ego there, and let others do that. Let it go. Teach people to do everything as much as, I mean, other people, so that you can go and do more and get that break and have that breather and have that moment. And that sort of plays in by doing so, by always training your replacement, which is something my mentor taught me, to always be training your replacement, so that way you can keep going and growing, and you're not creating a deficit when you're not there. That's creating an environment that is anti-fragile in many ways, right?
You're getting a second pair of eyes on something that, you know, if you're in that headspace of I'm the only one that knows how to do it, and you keep you know, doing whatever that process is alone, without adding a second pair of eyes, you may be missing the chance or the potential for something to be discovered to maybe make that process, if not faster, but even better, you know? So it's just, again, speaking into making an anti-fragile environment.
You can't do it all alone. Like that concept of the man, the one person, you know, is really a fragile concept, because what happens if you're not there? Boom, wow. And that's one of the things that I think a lot of our coaches set out to just, you know, I'm going to create the business on my own. I'm going to do it on my own. I can do it alone. But the reality is, maybe if you as a coach got some people to help you out, got some team action going, it's not so dependent on you, and your success. I mean, your success isn't entirely dependent on you. And I think that that's a much more anti-fragile system and a way to go out into the world and start a new business.
On the topic of business, Nicholas Taleb, the guy who came up with this whole idea of anti-fragility, he tells people not to trust the advice of people who don't have skin in the game. And so when a coach is coaching somebody and they're trying to get their client to a point of anti-fragility, they're not giving out advice, they're not just telling somebody what to do. The benefit of a coach is that they don't need to have skin in the game, because they're not giving advice. They're not telling you what to do. They're encouraging you to find your own answers. And that part of asking questions, finding your own answers, and then coming up with possible solutions, that is anti-fragile right there.
Well, I think of skin in the game in this example, though, would be the partnership that we create as a coach and client. I mean, the equality presence, and really get into that. So yeah, I agree with you. We're not taking the terms in the same way that they're meant. Yeah,
I think us as a coach, we don't have skin in their game. Like,
we're not attached to it. Yeah,
we're not attached to it. However, we are attached to our return on investment, and we are attached to the success of our business. So in some small way, we do have skin in the game, because what we want is to have a client that is anti-fragile, that's out there kicking butt and taking names and able to handle it when they get disrupted, when life gets a little crazy. It's not going to break them into a million pieces. And now you've got to refer them out. In a perfect world, we have clients that come in and we tackle the little disorders, the little chaoses, the little things, and we get through it. They get through it. And it's a process that's of growth, that you're just there to be consistent in. I love that the idea, though, of creating, being there to support a client and becoming anti-fragile. And how do we do that as a coach? Well, we do that by asking questions and empowering our clients to realize, okay, you know, you got this. And it's not me that's giving you the answers. Because now the moment I'm giving advice, we're creating a fragile client, because that client's success is dependent on me. And if I'm not there and they can't make their way through life, because I'm not going to be there with them, I'm not going to be standing next to them as they do whatever it is they're going to do. No. An anti-fragile client is a client that isn't dependent on me, is capable of going out there and doing it themselves, and they realize that. I think that that's really the heart of coaching, is that empowerment through obstacles, through the good and the bad, because it's unrealistic to think it's going to be all good. Sorry, soapbox.
And then also seeing goals further than just what the initial goal was set out to be, being able to form goals independently of the coach and then move forward. If you're just maintaining something, like if the client just wants to maintain their lifestyle, they're just being resilient. It's like maintaining a car in a way, where the resilience.
However, that's important. That's important. We can't give. We can't say get rid of it, because there is an importance to it, but it is definitely building towards what you're talking about.
We have to maintain the car, but we maintain it so we can drive it, right? Mm-hmm. And when we drive it, it's going to get friction. There's going to be rocks, dust, things that are going to hit it. There's all these things.
We got a lot of potholes here in Colorado.
We're going to have to change the oil. We're creating disorder. Mm-hmm. We're using it so that we can, the maintenance has to be there, but that's not.
But Brooke, the thing is though, cars are not anti-fragile systems. Cars don't get better the more you use it. If they did, I'd be able to resell my used car.
They get better.
Good point. Although over this last year, with all the viruses we had going on, vehicles were selling for more than they were worth, interestingly enough. But anyway, you actually have a really right point. When we talk about a car, it typically will be devalued as it ages.
But what we do, Anthony, to your point, what we do as coaches is when we challenge our clients, and when I use that word, you think challenge, that means it's not what you think it is. In a coaching space, what challenging is when a client says always, we ask around the always, right? What we do is we challenge our clients' way of thinking to open them up to broader and bigger opportunities. I think that is in many ways creating disorder a bit for we sort of create a space where a client can start, we create that disorder so that they can grow further than they first planned. We sort of get them to embrace the disorder and go, okay, I can do this. I can get through this. I see the way to do it finally. And then that pushes them to go a little further and a little further and a little further. I think that it's those little disorder moments, those challenging moments that gets them to go way beyond the goal that they first intended. I don't think that the client's going to come in and go, okay, this is my goal. And then you go, no, you got to push further. That's not what we do. What we do is ask around all these things, and that goal goes up naturally by itself, or they end up there on their own. Not because we say, no, that is not far enough. My clients all have to go beyond the goals they walk through my door. This is a rule.
So another term, cognitive dissonance, is a lot of what we're talking about as well. So I wonder, in comparison, I did not look this up to see the exact dictionary comparatively to see what those two are, because it really does sound, this anti-fragility really does sound like cognitive dissonance as well to me.
Well, I think with cognitive dissonance, a lot of times that's when we believe one thing, but another is what's actually happening.
Here's the cognitive.
But we're creating chaos in order to help break that. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Here's the cognitive dissonance of anti-fragility, at least in like society at large. We try to avoid stress as much as possible.
Yes.
We try to do things to reduce stress because it's good for us. Reducing stress, I mean, just in general for our health, having less stress is good for your health. By the same time, including stressors into your life has the opposite effect of what you would expect. It increases health as well. Mm-hmm. So you have these two different ideas. I am working to reduce the stress in my life, but also include the good kind of stress that makes me anti-fragile. Hmm. And you're trying to balance. That's the cognitive dissonance right there. And a lot of people have a hard time bridging that gap because either they're eliminating stress as much as possible and being resilient, or maybe they're adding too much stress and they're going too hard and they're not giving the rest days, like Jerome was saying earlier. There's a balance between how much stressors you can have in your life before it gets too much.
I think you have to have both in order to move in that growth mindset.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think working out is a great example. We know that if we want to gain muscle, we got to go to the gym and we got to break down muscle. Like we got to run. We have to create that pain a bit for that growth to happen. What's interesting is we as people don't often think of mental growth, emotional growth, spiritual growth in the same way. Like we've got to create a little bit of this pain for that growth to happen. But I think that it many times the pain is heaved upon us. Like it happens, you know, we suffer through a trauma, we suffer. But if we are somebody who's never been through a trauma before ever, when we experience a big trauma, it's going to be so much more. Mm-hmm. But if we're someone that's gone through little bits of trauma over and over and over and over and made it through, what do we know? We know I've been through X, Y, Z. I'll get through this.
Mm-hmm.
We know that, right? When anybody who's been through trauma and made it through on the other side goes, okay, man, I could get through just about anything because I made it through that. That is anti-fragility, right?
All of us.
I think that's resilience too.
That's what I was thinking, more resilience than.
Because I think getting through is where that resilience is. I think the piece that we've been talking about, Anthony said it earlier. We've all said it earlier, but drawing this line, the anti-fragility is the being able to take that and thriving from it and growing, and not having it impact us.
Well, that's that growing.
In the same right? way, yeah.
If you ever, I mean, when I experienced the loss of my best friend, I thought I was not how the I'm not. This is how am I going to get through this? You know, I'll never be happy again. I'll never, like, life will never be the same again. But here I am living life and I'm doing okay. And I know that I'll get through it. Right. I know now. And that's growth. Right. Is that not growth? I mean, I think that is a demonstration of growth, which is, yes, it takes resilience to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
It takes resilience to get through it. But then to grow from it, that's where that's mm-hmm. being that anti-fragile. That's making you anti-fragile. That's that yeah. I can get through it. I got it. I'll land on my feet. I'll be okay.
Yeah, I think you got to have it all in that sense. And I think they all play parts in that stepping stone. I'm, as you were describing it a few minutes ago, I just was seeing that foundation get built so that they could make that leap whenever it is that they're going towards. But that foundation of resilience, of the cognitive dissonance, of the anti-fragility growth mindset, I think all of it builds that foundation so they can make that leap.
I have a drawing on my wall, and it's a drawing I did, and one side of it's made of sedimentary stone, which a sedimentary stone is stone that's layers upon layers upon layers for, you know, billions of years has formed, and there's all these little cracks in it. Like you look at it, you can see the time in these rocks, and they're insanely strong. They're very strong. And the other side of it is this porcelain part that's cracked and very delicate. And it's meant to sort of be this duality sort of thing that I did. But what's interesting is if you look at the sedimentary side and you look at what porcelain is very smooth, very, and it breaks and it cracks, but that sedimentary stone, you can see in it the growth, you can see all of that layer on layer and layer. If you think of it in this space, is the struggle. It's the, and that's what creates it. That's what it's in fact that struggle that makes it stronger over time, over long periods, long
diamond, periods of time. A diamond, diamond, yeah, totally. And then as you were talking, I'm envisioning even tree trunks. You know, the rings of a tree trunk, you can tell, you know, when it got a virus, you can tell when it, you know, thrived, you can tell when it was.
Sadly, we can only see it once we cut it down.
Sadly. But it doesn't grow two heads.
Yeah, but powerful and strong and right. And each ring shows you the growth and the strength
What you've described, Brooke, also reminds me, you might have heard of this, Brooke, the Japanese art style called kintsugi.
Yes, yeah. I know. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's true.
It's a broken piece of pottery that's fragile. It's a fragile thing, but you rebuild it with like lacquer and gold, like to mend it, and it becomes something more valuable and you know,
beautiful and beautiful. Stronger. And stronger, too. That is what antifragile is, really. Mm-hmm. Awesome metaphors, guys.
Yeah,
you guys all passed your Sam portion of the class.
Cool.
So we've talked about when I first heard of anti-fragility, I was like, what is this? I was obviously curious. I had no clue what it was. And I thought, this is just going to be a whole bunch of like mumbo jumbo about like, be tough, be strong, rah, rah, rah. But in deeper exploration, I very much fell in love with this concept. And I think it's really, really cool. And I think that reading, I'm excited. I'm going to read the book, all the books. After I finish one book and read another book. Yeah. I'll do all of that. But I'm very, I really sort of fell in love with this concept quite a bit. So,
yeah.
Final thoughts, guys, because I think we're rounding the corner here.
I think I like this concept. I too have been enamored with it. At first I was like, what are we researching? What are we doing? And then I was digging and like, oh my gosh, it's a very exciting concept.
It's refreshing too, because I feel like a lot of our concepts for the lives, it's like, oh, we have this thing, but then there's the opposite thing. Well, it's not either. We meet in the middle somewhere. That, on the other hand, is like, no, fragility sucks. So does resilience. Be fragile. We're taking a hard stance this time, saying to be anti-fragile, and why everybody should be, and our clients, our coaches should be, our goals should be anti-fragile. You're just better for it.
Well, I think that we as a coach, if we want a client that's growing, we're going to push them to this they'll become more anti-fragile by us challenging them, by us asking around those. That's how we remove blocks. That's how is anti-fragility, like the creation of anti-fragility.
And it's not the mere adapting to a new situation. It's actually growth and thriving. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a realistic growth and thriving. It's not like always, you know, everything's going to be happy all the time. Oh, like, this is like, no, there's going to be struggle and stress, and it's going to be hard at times. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen is you're going to get through it and you're going to get stronger for it. So, Jerome?
I want to say, I bet if we sat here long enough, we could come up with some points as to why fragility is good, just because that's the type
of thing. Off the top of my head.
It makes it pretty. If we go to, I can do it right now. If we go to Brooke's analogy of what she put together in her art piece, she pulled in the rugged strength, the growth, the ability to withstand, and then the fragile portion of it can add enhance the beauty of the.
I'm gonna get the art piece so you can see it.
Going, Lisa, I get it. There's beauty and fragility, I guess, is where you're going. You know, the soft, dainty princess, very beautiful. You know, she's.
I think I also I was told this in college by some professor. I don't know if it's true or not. Oh, this.
There it is.
Yeah, yes. So it's a little. I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's being mended, both sides. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
But yeah, all guys' points were great. I just wanted to bring that up because I genuinely thought that was funny. So.
All right. Yes. I think we should wrap it about up then.
By the way, anybody who is just if you like this, leave comments and I think this is a really awesome concept. I'm bummed that we didn't get as much interaction. So now I'm just going to find a way to just shove it down all of our coaches' throats.
Darn it. Next week, we're talking about the emotions of money.
Yes.
So everybody,
that'll be fun.
We're talking about how money is, more than just money. There is emotion attached to money.
It's capital. I hope you all studied your Marx and Engels and your communist manifestos.
I think it's an important concept for anybody going into business to understand that there is, a lot of our coaches are doing this, to understand that there is an emotion attached to the exchange of money and that understanding that can be very powerful in a coaching space when it comes to accountability and when it comes to the business pricing yourself, et cetera. So, and also, understanding how it could affect our clients, there are people who hold grudges for lifetimes over small amounts of money.
It's true.
And it's like, there's just, you can't escape it. There's emotion attached to it.
So that's don't spoil it, Brooke. That'll be a topic for next week.
Next week, emotional money.
All right, guys, we will see you later.
See you guys next time.
Wait. We didn't close it. We said like us, share us. I'm missing the third thing. Comment. Take our intensives. They're amazing. Did I miss something?
Nope.
Okay. Great to see you all.
See you guys.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Once again, this is brought to you by Certified Life Coach Institute. We're an ICF accredited school who certifies our life coaches in 3-day online intensive courses. In addition to other podcast episodes, feel free to check us out every Tuesday at 4 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time on YouTube or Facebook for our CLCI Lives, where we get together and discuss various topics that are centered around sharpening your skills so you can become a better certified life coach. For more information, feel free to visit us at CertifiedLifeCoachInstitute.com. Until next time, be well.